It's Morning Edition from NPR News. Good morning. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Renee Montaigne. Louis Libby, guilty. That was the jury's verdict yesterday in the trial of Vice President Cheney's former chief of staff. He was convicted of lying and obstructing justice. The case turned on statements the man known as Scooter Libby made during an investigation into the leak of a CIA agent's identity. It exposed the complicated and sometimes unsavory relationship between the White House and the Washington media. In a moment, we'll hear more about how the White House sought to manage that relationship. First, NPR's David Folkenflik looks at some lessons the trial offered on how the press itself operates in the nation's capital.
Reporters as heroes, reporters as goats, reporters on the witness stand. The trial of Louis Libby was a pretty uncomfortable spectacle for the media to watch and to be part of.
Lyndon Johnson once said that it's a heck of a lot easier to throw grenades than it is to catch them. And was he right?
That was NBC News Washington Bureau Chief Tim Russert last month, nervously recounting for his network his ordeal on the witness stand after the tables were turned on the Meet the Press interviewer and he was asked the questions. Juror Dennis Collins said yesterday that Russert's testimony was a key element in convicting Libby. Which brings us to our first and perhaps clearest lesson. When a journalist who swears to protect an anonymous source goes up against a determined federal prosecutor, well, you know how the song goes. The law won. Robert Zelnick is a former Pentagon correspondent for ABC News. He says there should be federal legislation to give reporters protection against having to give up sources.
My sense is that something very precious between reporters and sources is under more sustained attack than it's ever been before.
A lot of reporters testified before the grand jury and in open court about sources whose identities they had pledged to protect. And Zelnick, now a professor at Boston University, says that means a lot of people won't share information off the books on other stories.
I think reporters are the net losers, and I think when reporters are the net losers, then the public is the net loser.
Judith Miller, then of the New York Times, spent 85 days in jail to protect Libby, but ultimately relented because she said he had assured her she had his permission. Matthew Cooper, late of Time magazine, had sworn he wouldn't reveal who told him that former diplomat Joseph Wilson's wife worked at the CIA— but at the last minute, he named presidential adviser Karl Rove to a grand jury. Cooper had already testified about talking to Libby. Libby was acquitted of lying to FBI agents about his conversation with Cooper. In fact, neither Libby nor Rove nor anyone else who leaked Plame's name was ever charged with the crime of exposing an undercover CIA agent's identity. Here's lesson number two, as described by David Korn, Washington editor of the Liberal Nation magazine.
Reporters were shown to be human. They had memory lapses. They couldn't always read their notes afterwards.
Other failings were more substantive. Miller left the Times after editors concluded she hadn't been candid with them about conversations with Libby. Miller bitterly rejects that claim. Bob Woodward of the Washington Post later apologized to his editors about the conversations he had about Plame and Wilson with Richard Armitage, then Deputy Secretary of State. Woodward didn't want to get caught up in the inquiry, but it blindsided his own paper once he was. Lesson number three, reporting the news in a town filled with powerful people with secrets ain't always pretty.
Journalists are used. That's part of the process. They often know that.
Frank Sesno was CNN's Washington bureau chief and now is a special correspondent there.
It's sometimes dangerous because if you're used and you don't realize it and you use bad information, you mislead your audience.
Reporters actually held off on the leak of Plame's identity until the conservative columnist Robert Novak printed it. The White House hoped to discredit Wilson as an independent voice by tying him to the CIA, which it saw as tentative on the threat of Saddam Hussein. But that leads to a final lesson. However many times the White House claims it doesn't care what the mainstream media publishes or broadcasts, it really, really does. Which is why Libby carefully monitored the coverage of Wilson's criticism of the war, why Libby told reporters about Wilson's wife at the CIA, and ultimately, why he found himself in the sights of a special prosecutor. David Folkenflik, NPR News, Washington.